Well, from the time I was fishing and now, I could see the big difference in the fish industry. The small boats, you could go down any place down the coast down there and get a load of fish, no problem. Halibut, barracuda, sea bass, rock cod, all the banks, fish all over. A lot of feed, a lot of sardines, a lot of anchovy, and lots of birds, you know, seabirds. You know. I don't know what they call them in American, but in Italian, they call them chumbing. Chumbing. But I don't know what they call them in American. They dive, you know, and they go after these anchovies, you know, big school black balls of anchovies. They get them. They dive. Then you run with a boat, you know, they run right, well, you run right into them, you know. And here they come up and they're throwing them right out. They've got their gullet full and their mouth full. Here you see all these anchovies floating around, little small anchovies.
I think that's what we call
you don't see. You don't see that anymore. You don't even see the birds on the islands anymore.
Yeah.
Well, and then they got the Mexicans. And they're fertilizing everything that they get a hold of, all sardines, anchovies, whatever they get a hold of, you know, anchovetes. They're fertilizing that stuff. And bait's getting pretty scarce.
What do you mean they're fertilizing it?
They can fertilize out of it.
I'd like to go back and talk to you about your days as a bait tuna fisherman. How did you feel like it was all work, or?
Well, there's a lot of sport with it. Very much so, because we used to get bait. It was easy to get bait because there's plenty of bait. And it was easy to catch the fish. There was plenty of fish. Especially when we'd go down in the Gulf down there. Be slick, calm, warm water, 85, 86 water sometimes. You know, sometimes we'd get up to 90, but then we didn't like it that hot because it was still too warm. And, well, 3 days, 4 days, get our load of fish and start home. That's all. It was just one trip right after another. And everything was easy. It was just a sport. I hated when the last day when we had to come home. I had to make that 5-6 day run from the Gulf. That's all over the tickets to come home. You know, about 6 days from
what
inside.
What Gulf are you talking about?
Gulf of California.
Yeah.
Little California. Yeah. And it's really a sport. It was schools of fish all over. Go in there and then just. Like I said, just chum them and then you just shovel them aboard. We call them shoveling them aboard.
How long did you work at that in the daytime?
When we had the Venetian, I shall work.
I mean, each day, when did you quit?
Oh, well, we had to quit to ice it up. We'd only work about 3 hours, 3.5 hours. The big job was icing the fish up. We didn't have wells in the boat then. On the smaller boats, wells, you know, where they had brine and stuff. We had refrigeration coils. That was just to keep the ice, you know, from melting. But then we had, when we first started fishing for skipjack and tuna, you know, we used to place and fix them in, you know, in bins. We had bins, you know, bin boards, and then you get up so high and then put a board in there, you know, just build it up like that with posts, you know, down below. And used to place these tuna side by side, you know, until the last day. Then we threw them all over so they could scatter it all over. Of course, the hole was full. And they come home, and when they come home, they'd unload. There was a problem. Sometimes you would just turn the hose down the hole there, you know, wash down and take ice the next day and leave the following day again. Well, we used to make sometimes 12 trips.
You mean before you fill the hole?
No, 12 trips a year, you know, season.
Yes.
Then we knock off about November, and then take care of the equipment and start off
in
January again.
Did they fish in those days where you got whatever they got for the fish was split up or whatever? Or did they, that was at a later thing? You know, the more they caught, the more they...
On a share basis.
That's all share. It's still share basis.
Yeah.
On these big sailors too. They get a percentage of the, they're allowed a certain percent, that exactly, each building has a different, I don't want to put something on there.
How many tons did your boat carry,
the small one was 65 tons.
65 tons.
And then we got, later on, we bought a bigger one, 160 tons.
Capacity. How big was that boat?
That was 100 foot, 102 feet.
Mm-hmm. How many years did you fish like that, more or less? Not exactly.
Well, I'd say about 40 years at least.
You did.
Of course, I only put 7 years in between 1920s. 1927 to 1934, I managed the fish market, and then we built the Venetian. And
you built what?
The Venetian.
The 65 foot boat.
Then. That was built in 1935.
Do you remember the freeze of whatever year?
Yes, I remember. Which year and stuff, but I remember one time was in a foundry. I was in the foundry working. At night, you know, you get all the sand ready, the dirt sand, it's all mixed, you know, the dirt's mixed together, you know, prepared for the next morning, you know.
Yeah.
So, wanted to go down there, 7:30, you know. Didn't work till 8, you know, just got around chewing the fat with the other fellows around there. Then we all got that on our bench, you know, it was a little bench, you know, and I was on one side and I had my sand dirt, and I could put my hand in the net, and the thing was all frozen. No kidding.
How long did it stay frozen?
Oh, just a while. Then we got the trowel, you know.
Yeah.
And that was just a shell, not clear through, but then they finally broke it. We had to wait till about 9 o'clock, because the darn thing was so darn cold, because we had to use it, put it in the mold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You had to work it with a pipe, you know. We were making fittings, you know, plumbing fittings, you know. And you had to pound it down with a mallet and one thing or another. You get the hand in, you hurry, you freeze. So, finally, ended up with we started around about 9:30. We finished that day. The next day, then we put these cores in the oven. It's a big oven there. Brought from here to the world. I had to take care of that too. Plus, to making cores, use coke, you know, and light the fire. Then we put the door down, and that coke could bake these cores, you know, for the next day. Well, next morning we go down there and I open the door and goes in there, you know, and start, I lift up one of the cores, you know, and I did, it was green, yet it wasn't baked, you know. So, closed up shop for that day. And I went downtown to here's the icicles was on the plaza, the fountain.
Yeah,
I remember when they built that, you know. Mayor Wilde was the one who had it built at the time. And that thing was frozen, so there icicles all over the darn thing. But what year now? I don't know. Was what?
It's not.
15 or something like that.
Now, where were you? Were you on in the steel house while that flood was going on, 1916, 17, or do you remember? There was a flood, you know, the river.
The old town there, all through there.
Yeah.
When that flood came off, I was fishing, me and my brother.
You were?
About 1914, we were around.
I was 16
or 17. 16,
now.
Was it 16?
Yeah,
like that. Before my father passed away, was it? You know, we were out San Clemente Island fishing rock cards, you know, and see all the debris, you know, and then we came in, we heard about it, and then I went out, we went out there to look, and the bridge was down and everything, and I think they had to run the steamer, they couldn't, there was no railroad then at the time,
yeah.
That was washed out part of it, it had to go by steamer at that time. Not flooded, I'm talking about.
Yeah. What did the war mean in San Diego in 1917, 18? How did that affect San Diego?
Remember, a lot of friends had to go, they were drafted. I don't know, everybody was taking it with a smile, with a laughing. I don't know. I remember I was about at the time when I was 19 years old. And then, yeah, I was 19, going on 20. 19.
Were there any changes in the city in at all during that time?
The big change came in the city after the Korean War.
Yeah. Servicemen in San Diego, or?
Well, there were a lot of servicemen in San Diego.
Was it mostly Navy or Army during the World War?
Mostly Navy. In the First World War.
Yeah.
No, they had the Army too. Yes, right at Camp Kearney, and that's coming to Camp Kearney and all the places. They had the Army. Steve was out there. And some of our relatives were out there, and they would come visit us while they were training at Camp Kearney.
Well, then you went to fishing. You were fishing.
I was fishing. Yeah, we built the California, the California, in 1917,
yeah.
The year of the war.
And then you were fishing all the time.
We were fishing, and then of course my brother got drafted, and I was still fishing. And then they classified me as 1A. After that, they run another draft at 21. You know. And I was in that draft. By that time, the armistice was signed. And then, of course, we had that epidemic of influenza, you know.
Yes. Were you living here at the time? Do you remember what happened during that time?
The flu during that time?
Sure,
a bit of it. I've lost a sister, lost my brother-in-law out of it. I was taking care of my mother. She was late, sick. Take care of my brother-in-law's, my sister, that she was sick, and the two girls. Then I had to come down on Ivy Street, down to my other sisters. They had four or five, Corley, Andrew, and there's four of them. How many were there? Paul, Andrew, Johnny, and Lucy. There's four. They're all little bitty kids, all babies. And then my sister, she was sick. And when I went down there, tried to help out a little bit. I left my mother home alone. She was alone, you know. She wasn't too bad, you know. I had to down there, do all I could for them, you know. And then my brother-in-law, he was running around, you know. He had a scarf around his neck or an old sweater or something. He had the bug, you know, and he didn't know how sick he was, and the poor fellow, then that following day went to bed, and the following day he passed away. That's where they were dying, people.
Did you do anything to prevent you from getting it?
For me getting it?
Yeah,
I drank a lot of whiskey. Yeah, no kidding. And then it came to the point, you know, it couldn't take care of everybody, you know, they got a nurse. Nurses. She wasn't no more nurse than I was, you know, but somebody to help them. This whiskey, it was a gallon of whiskey, you know. You buy it, it's $2.50. That was the best brand, too, you know, supposed to be them days, you know. And every once in a while I'd take a shot. I'd have 3 or 4 shots a day anyway every time I go visit. She'd take a drink, you know. And she had a boyfriend. The first thing you know, that gallon was going down pretty fast. And then we finally got rid of her. Then the boss, all the time, yeah, mask.
Yeah, that's good. That's what they
said. And then after it settled, you know, a little more quiet, go cabaret. And then the cabarets were closed, too, you know. Closed all the cabarets.
What did you do for fun when you came in from fishing?
Go cabaret. Cabarets were open. You're looking at me.
No.
And you had to have a registration card, you know, and I wasn't even registered yet, you know. And I was going around with the older fellas. I was going to cab room.
It was okay.
You know, I'd have my drink there, you know. Then they'd have a bottle of pop right there. Then they'd have a sandwich right there, you know. Soon somebody, the MPs, you know, come, you know. And I'd have put liquor aside and drinking my pop, you know, and stuff like that. You asked me for a trial. I said, well, I'm not old enough yet, you know. Said, I wasn't, I didn't have a registration for it. So that never bothered me. I was always lucky for that part. Matt Gio, well, he had a smooth face anyway, light-complected fellow, light beard, you know. Never had a beard, but what I mean, he's light-complected. Just about the same color your hair, but only browner, you know. No, but you know that. But he went in the bar, you know, drink beer, and they looked at him, and served him a beer, and you know, I wasn't even 18 years old yet. Can you buy beer? No problems. I'm as big as I am now, you know.
Did you ever go to Tent City? Down in Coronado? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Would you go down there to dance, or just
weekend? We used to go there quite often, and then on the 4th of July, we used to that's before they opened Mission Beach, you know. Oh, yes. That was the hot spot, San Diego, then Tent City.
The depression years, how did that affect fishing and the life, you know?
You mean 1929?
Yeah, through the Depression.
Didn't hurt as much. We didn't feel it. I was in a market then, operating a fish market, you know, at the time. Huh. We didn't feel it. In the fish business.
Was there many people here that were hurting, that you knew?
Well, there's quite a lot of people here. But they had, you know, the WPA workers that were around, fellas that I knew, sweeping around, just pushing a broom or something like that. But as far as the fishermen, they didn't feel it.
Did they make any money at all during that time?
Well, yes, I'd say that, you know, we were making our living. Of course, things wasn't running full blast or anything like that, but...
Were many people very unhappy with it? I mean, because they no longer could do what they wanted to do?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't remember.
Didn't affect you in any way?
Well, it didn't affect it, didn't it? Things ran just the same. We didn't feel it at all in the fishing industry. We really didn't.
Did people still go out fishing? Yeah, they must have, because you were in the market. Huh?
What was that?
I said they must have still fished. You were in the market.
Yes, they were fishing, yes.
All right, now, where were you when Pearl Harbor happened?
When we got to lose at Pearl Harbor, I was in the kitchen. In the kitchen, we were just going to go through, we got word, Johnny heard over the radio, wasn't it?
It wasn't.
No, I was home. That's what we learned it from my brother-in-law. It's tender dust, you know, to hear, you know, that thing, you know, when it went on. Well, first got the report. Quite a confusion talking about it, you know.
And then
I was listening to the radio right along, then, you know, they didn't.
What feelings did you have about it at the time? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It made you mad. It made me mad, you know, the way they did that job, you know, Pearl Harbor. It just shook us.
Did any of your people have to go to war?
A nephew in 44, you mean in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Nephew, I was getting that mixed up a little while.
Okay. Just a nephew or two?
That's all.
Yeah.
Just a nephew.
All right, what did downtown San Diego, or this area, whatever. Do you want to describe some of the things that were going on around here during World War II?
Oh, well, there's a lot of Navy, really a lot of service people running back and forth, and then they start building concrete ships and everything else. There's a lot of commotion around San Diego at that time. Then
did it change your neighborhood in any way?
Well, then they got stopped by barracks around here. That next door, it was a vacant lot right here. They put barracks there, and these young fellas put them in there, and they came over, and he was using our telephone and everything. We let them have everything. And then they put anti-aircraft guns across the street. There was a vacant lot there.
You mean right in this, where this house is? Right in this area, place?
Right here, yeah, just across the street. They had anti-aircraft guns, and then that winter, it was when it started to rain, was it?
Was it?
Well, it started before the banks were finished. There was another vacant lot over there. They were in tents over there. They were just all wet, get soaked and wet. We were bringing pots of coffee to them and stuff like that. And then Christmas came. Then they built, that was a few months after that again. Then they started building this barracks here. There were about 25, 30 young fellas in there. Well, we gave them a case of oranges and stuff and helped them out. Of course, they didn't have much of anything. They were unsettled.
What was the purpose of them being there?
I don't know. We were training, I guess they were expecting the Japanese to come over and bomb here. But then they put balloons, you know, up here, you know, all over.
What did they look like?
Just big balloons, you know, so that, with cables, you know, hanging down, you know, so any planes that come flying low or something, you know, get tangled up in them and stuff like that. They had them scattered all over the field, the Lindbergh Field, all over.
Were there any place else along the coast?
I wouldn't know. All we knew was these here, that they had here. There were plenty of them there. And that's all I can say about that part of
it
there, but I didn't see any more around any place else. But I did have my head about having balloons around.
Did they change any of the buildings downtown in any way?
Well, they camouflaged all the airplane plants over there, you know. They had nets over there with the camouflage and stuff.
You had a nice bird's eye view of that, didn't you, from here?
No. No, we're up way above.
We
saw everything.
Observing that.
Then, of course, it was dark all the time.
How did you get around then in the city? Did you drive? Were there cars? Yeah, there were cars.
No, they when they had the alerts or some kind of alert and stuff like that, they put all the lights out and stuff. But they didn't have any blackouts completely.
Not even ever?
I don't recall having a blackout.
So, where were you on,
in the war?
What day did they call it? I forgot.
I think it's, wasn't that VJ Day?
I remember now, when they were signed peace and everything, when they threw an atomic bomb in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
And that other Japanese town, city. We were at the coast, at the quarantine station at the time, when they told us about it. We didn't have no radio on the boat at the time. Yeah. And then they had the gates, you know, across the net, you know, across the point, you know, the channel, for submarines couldn't get out not unless they opened the gates, you know. So you'd had to wait, you know, until they opened up and they'd go through, and then we had to go to the quarantine station because we had ports, you know, and Ensenada. And that's when they told us, he says, that the war's going to be over, he says, because the Japanese, they bomb Hiroshima and stuff. We didn't know nothing about atomic bomb or stuff. It was Greek word to me, you know, at the time, you know. And that's when we heard it, you know.
Did you join the celebration downtown that I heard about?
No, I didn't go downtown.
You want to tell me what you saw?
Well, I believe you were out fishing at the time. And my mother and my aunt and my sister and I, the four of us, we walked
up. All the other worked in when we came in then.
Yeah.
That's
it was jubilation and everything.
At the quarantine station, it says that was always that they threw these atomic bombs, you know, at the Japanese, you know.
Yeah.
That's,
no, we were downtown, the women, we were downtown.
There probably was.
Oh, they were, everybody was wild. They were, service member kissing all the young girls and everything. And the thing that I can remember, I had just gotten a new permanent the two days before, and I felt something on my hair, and what some sailor had snipped a lock of my hair. It was just wild down there.
What did they do besides that? I know they'd be kissing girls, but what else did they do?
Oh, everybody just hollering. I mean, they're just walking up and down and hollering. And then, of course, then it was just, it got a little bit too much, so we decided to come home. we didn't stay too long.
Okay, thank you. I thank you very much for
the problem. The only thing
I
is
hope it will help.
All that stuff does come back to me, you know.
It's very great. You really remembered many, many, many things that we hadn't heard before. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.